Are you sure? On cue, John stood up and moved toward the door, saying, I'll be right back. I turned to Drake and said, Well, no crime committed here, right? He fixed me with a dismissive glance that told me he was the cop and that he'd leave when he damned well felt like it and not a moment sooner. Amy said, I'm okay. Really, just tired. Drake and I stared that way long enough for him to establish that he would indeed leave, but that his dick was still well bigger than mine. He grabbed his hat off the counter and pulled it over his ears.
Yeah, I gotta get back.
To Amy.
But you tell me if something like this happens again. You got that?
Emphasis on me.
Yeah, thanks.
With the slam of a door and a puff of frigid air, he was gone. I experienced the unique awkward silence that comes from being alone in the room with someone for whom you once made up a humorous nickname behind their back. Sea cucumbers, you see, vomit up their guts to distract predators. And around the third time she threw up on somebody's desk, we... Well, I think I mentioned that earlier. Anyway. She studied the scratched surface of the kitchen table and drummed her fingers. My eyes bounced around the room, from the calendar on the fridge, monkeys posed in Victorian costumes, to the stump, where her hand should be, to the sleeping dog on the floor, apparently indifferent to both its own resurrection and the return of its master, to the package of plastic picnic cups on the counter, and finally back to Amy's missing hand. What the hell was taking John so long? Amy leaned forward and said, So, like, what's the creepiest thing you've ever seen? I thought, then said, I was at Cracker Barrel the other night. And two tables over from me, there's this group of four old women. They're all wearing big red hats. Red hats and purple coats. I keep glancing back at them, and they're all there, just drinking coffee. Not eating. So I get up to leave, right?
You're eating by yourself?
Yeah. So I get up to leave, right, and I pay. And on the way out the door, I see another table. And there's another group of women there in red hats. Purple jackets. Amy thought about this for a moment, then said,
Weird.
She looked down at the table, then said in a low conspiratorial whisper,
Have you ever heard of spontaneous combustion?
Yeah.
I have a friend, Dana, who was in the grocery store one day, and her arm, like, bursts into flame, just like that, just her arm. And she's screaming and waving her arm around and around, flame shooting everywhere. Finally, the cops showed up and arrested her.
Arrested her? Why did...
Possession of an unlicensed firearm.
A great, heavy silence settled over the room. She looked down at the table again, a smile playing at her lips, looking extraordinarily pleased with herself. I said, You know, in the Middle East, a woman can be flogged for telling a story like that. John burst in at that moment, carrying a plastic squeeze bottle that used to hold dishwashing liquid, but now held a clear, thick substance that might have been mistaken for hair gel. Though if you did, you would likely never have the chance to mistake anything for hair gel again. I stood up, John next to me. Interrogation mode. Okay, I began. We know you knew something was going on. You knew something was coming, and you had your room wired up to catch it on camera. Long, long pause from Amy. Finally, she said,
It's happened before.
Missing time? She nodded.
At least half a dozen times that I know of.
I'm sure it's more.
Little things. Starting probably 2 weeks ago, but who knows? You know? I turn on bathwater, blink, and it's all over the floor, the tub overflowing in 2 seconds. Once I woke up in a different room. Another time I was suddenly in bed, my shirt turned around, backward. I had been up watching TV, and then a second later there I was, lying down.
John said,
And you never see anything?
No.
I said, What do you think it is? UFO?
No, no.
No. Sleepwalking, you know, blackouts. I thought something with the medication, maybe.
I'm sick of your lies, scumbag.
I said, John. He pulled a saucer from a strainer in the sink. He squirted some of the fluid from the bottle onto it, then found a spoon on the counter. He said to her,
Imagine something, a physical object.
Like what?
Anything.
She actually smiled, amused, ready to play along. She pushed her hair from her forehead, and I noticed that, tragically, her bangs were the exact length to fall right into her eyeballs. She squinted into an almost comical expression of concentration. The gel in the saucer began to bubble and rise, twisting and spilling upward like the wax in a lava lamp. At the top, it slowly spread outward like a mushroom. After a moment, it held the shape of a tree, 6 inches tall, like one of those little crystal sculptures some old people keep on their shelves. Amy was impressed.
How?
We have no idea, I said. Somebody mailed it to me. Guy said he worked for an oil company, and they found the stuff stuck to the end of a drill bit that had been about 1,000 feet down. They thought it was lubrication or something, like they had a leak, until the stuff killed one of them. The tree was already beginning to melt and puddle back into a gel pool. John held the spoon just above it and said, "Yeah, it's pretty impressive that it can do anything at all, considering it's just a big faggot." The gel turned blood red. The shape shifted, grew a hole in the center. Spikes emerged from the edges. Teeth.
"Oh, you don't like that, do you?" John taunted. "I've seen gel that could make shapes twice the size of you. If you're so special, why don't you go out and get a job, you puss?"
With a blur and a clink, half the spoon was gone. The gel creature had it in its jaws, bending it and crunching the metal shard like a dog on a bone. A chair clattered to the floor, and suddenly Amy was standing, arms wrapped around her abdomen.
"Just wait," John said. "It always calms down after a second."
The color of the thing faded from crimson to pink and back to clear again. It eventually settled into a puddle, a chunk of bent spoon waiting in the pool. I said, "We got a whole collection of weird shit like this at home. The stories you heard about us? They're mostly true. This is what we do. We have a talent for it. We have seen shit that would fuel your nightmares, so you need to understand, Amy, that there is nothing you can say that will make us think you're crazy. But we need to know everything if we're going to help you. Do you want our help? Because weird things are happening tonight. Big, weird, stupid things." She brushed her hair from her eyes, nodded, then said, "Okay. Talk to us." She said, "The basement." The door to the basement was hidden behind a shelf. Not a cool pull the book off the bookcase to make it swing open Batman's secret passage, but a regular old bookshelf that somebody had set in front of the slim door in the storage room to discourage strangers from going in. Strangers, or a thin girl without the upper body strength to move a bookcase. It took John and me both to scoot it aside, even without a lot of books on the shelves. Amy shoved open the door, then reached around in the darkness until she found a pull string for a dangling light bulb, the once white string now a greasy brown. Cobwebs, bare brick walls, a smell like a pile of wet dogs. I realized about halfway down the creaky stairs that we were letting the girl take point on our adventure into the dark basement and how utterly unheroic this was. I reached out and, with a small move of my body, did something that would change my life forever. I gently moved Amy aside and stepped down ahead of her, putting myself between her and the shadows. Cold down here. I saw little rectangles of white floating in the darkness to my left, ground-level windows buried under snowdrifts. Around a corner, I saw something long and jagged poking out of the darkness, like a tree branch. In the dim light, my imagination went wild, seeing razor-sharp claws on the end. I stepped around the corner, blinking to get some night vision back. In my adrenaline-charged state, I saw a monster, the arm ending in a squat body, covered with pointed plates like an alligator's back, tall legs like a grasshopper, jointed backward and sticking up in the air, giving the creature a W shape. The head had twin bundles of eyes, clustered like an insect, which wrapped around the back of a narrow skull. The mouth was long and equipped with mandibles that ended in points as sharp as hypodermic needles. I stared at the thing, blinking, thinking it would reveal itself to be, I don't know, a hot water heater or something. Then I realized the monster-shaped shadow was, surprisingly, a monster. Amy rounded the corner. I screamed, "Get back!" and threw out a hand to stop her, catching her right in the face. I had the gun in my hand, yanking it free and firing in one motion, the sound deafening in the basement. I was sure the shot was wild, as likely to hit my foot as the beast. The creature's shoulder exploded in a shower of yellow sparks. The extended arm flew off, tumbled to the ground, the jagged end aflame. I kicked the creature in the chest, knocking it to the floor. I picked up the severed arm and clubbed the beast with it over and over again, screaming at the top of my lungs over the thunk, thunk, thunk of the beast's own limbs smacking its crotch. After a moment, it became apparent that the monster was not fighting back. It lay there, its limbs splayed stiffly into midair, as if petrified. I gave it 7 or 8 more thumps with its arm, and then dropped the limb on the concrete floor with a thud. I sucked in huge breaths of dank, moldy air, trembling. John approached, looking down at the broken beast. He said, "It wasn't very agile, was it?" "Guys," Amy pushed past us. She squatted and picked up the monster, setting it on its feet again. "It's not real, you guys. It's a model. A prop. Jim made it." She balanced the thing on its feet, then stumbled past some strewn cardboard boxes and found another switch. This one turned on a fluorescent shop light overhead. The creature was actually a lot more horrifying under the glaring lights. The other arm was curled at its side, with talons that looked like they could cut down trees. I could see my reflection in each of the 100 little bundled eyes, a kaleidoscope of my own very tired and pale face. I said, "Oh, I'm, sorry about that." She turned to me, eyes bright, looking like that was just about the most entertaining thing she had seen all year. I looked the monster over. It was, at the very least, an astonishing work of creature art. John said, "Look at that, at the arm, and tendons and all that." I examined the broken arm on the floor, the wound ending in a frayed spray of torn bone and connective tissue. Big Jim had sculpted the inside of this thing. The musculature, tendons, bone, presumably organs as well. Impossible. "He was into that stuff," Amy said. "He had all those sci-fi magazines, and he used to have subscriptions to magazines about makeup and effects and all that stuff, always mixing big buckets of latex. He wanted to do that stuff when he grew up. This one took him 2 months. He would come down here after work and just stay. I wouldn't hear him until early the next morning, just hours and hours." She trailed off, the memories of her dead brother taking her mind elsewhere. It seemed like a bad time to mention that I thought it would take a 6-man crew from Industrial Light and Magic to make a prop like this, on a budget of $250,000. This was soy sauce craftsmanship. "Jim, you crazy fucker, I'm starting to think we could have been friends." "Come on," she said. "Over here." She went through a short doorway that John had to duck through, a corner of the basement that may have been a coal room decades ago. She knelt down and plugged in a yellow extension cord, bathing the room in a harsh glare of light. 2 halogen work lamps stood on thin metal stands, illuminating a small workspace including 2 folding metal tables and dozens of jars and tubes, dye and latex and plaster and every other thing. White 5-gallon buckets were piled high in one corner. Amy said, "He had boxes and boxes and boxes of sketches and notes. He used to write these science fiction stories, really bad ones. He wouldn't let me read them, but I'd sneak looks, and the hero would always wind up tied up and naked and at the mercy of these beautiful female alien princesses who would torture him. Jim, you know, he kind of went a long time without a girlfriend." She was kneeling over a stack of cardboard banker's boxes. She pulled the lid off one and brought up a series of sketch pads. "He was doing something bigger, a novel or a screenplay. I tell him that they wouldn't let him do his own props and write the movie both. He said James Cameron did his own designs and models for the robot in Terminator, though. You know that scene in The Matrix where they've got a shot of Keanu reaching out to an open door and you can sort of see the reflection of the camera crew in the doorknob? Jim saw that the first time he watched it. Just a total expert. He had all these plans, always talking about selling the house and moving and..." She shrugged, cutting off the words, I think, to keep tears spilling out with them. She handed me a bundle of 4 or 5 art pads. I flipped through them, saw sketches of joints and muscles and hands and claws and eyes. I flipped further and saw something that caught my eye. It was a group of men, walking with 3 beings that were not men. They were pure black, their limbs represented on the paper by heavy swaths of charcoal, drawn like they were men made of shadow. The men in the picture were in a small room at a doorway. One of the dark creatures was reaching out as if to open the door. I flipped more pages.
I saw another sketch of a doorway. This one was familiar. I had seen it just an hour ago. It was the abandoned balcony door upstairs. I glanced back at the broken sculpture and said, "All this, that thing back there. Jim said it was for a story he was working on?" "He never talked about it, but I saw his notes. You know, after." "He kept a journal with all that stuff, and I had to sort through everything." She wiped at her cheek with her sleeve, and I felt like an ass for asking. We didn't ask another question, but she said, "It was parallel universe stuff, typical sci-fi, alternate reality and all that. I think his story was about the people on an Earth, a parallel Earth, you know, that was real close to this one, and they were trying to build some kind of bridge between the two. Then they would, you know, invade."
"And that creature back there," I asked, "how did that figure in?"
She shrugged. John said solemnly, "I'm gonna guess that was the thing that tied him up so the naked alien women could interrogate him." Amy laughed, and I suddenly remembered why I keep John around. I glanced back again at the one-armed creature and said, "Let's get the hell out of here." I couldn't have known it at the time, right? That maybe all of our answers were there, in Jim's stuff? That maybe he had pieced the whole thing together? At that moment, on that night, I just wanted out of there. The rotten smell of guilt hung over every thought, especially on the subject of Jim. So yeah, we clomped up the stairs and flipped out the lights. All of Jim's materials were thrown under a blanket of darkness, never to be seen by human eyes again. I never went back down there, from that day until the day we burned the house to the ground. Back upstairs, John asked Amy if she had ever seen a jellyfish-looking thing around the house, or a huge bag full of what looked like butcher trimmings. To my complete lack of surprise, she said she had not. She also said that she had never caught anything on the webcams, that they were set to click on at the sign of movement. "It's always just me rolling over," she said. "I move around a lot in bed because of my back and all that." "The other times you went missing," John thought to ask, "how long ago was it?" "It happened for sure Sunday night, then Tuesday night, then last night, you know."
"Every 48 hours, John observed, "as far as we know."
"But it's not usually as long. The most time I had lost up until now was about 6 hours from midnight until early morning. This is the first time I lost a whole day."
"Is it always around midnight?" I asked.
"Yeah, I guess." Amy declined our offer to help her stay and sift through the webcam photos from last night. I was desperate to see what would show up, but this was her bedroom, and I suppose she had a reasonable fear of two creepy males clicking through shots of her dressing and doing the things girls do alone in their bedrooms, lighting farts or whatever. She promised to look through them and let us know. I told her that I was pretty sure I had moved the photos to a folder buried in printer drivers. On accident. John volunteered to stay the night and stake the place out, but Amy recoiled at that idea and said the night was mostly over anyway. And so, feeling like men trying to work a jigsaw puzzle blindfolded and using only our butt cheeks to grip the pieces, we left. I came home to see 3:26 a.m. on my wall clock. I turned on every light in the place, checking every room for any damned thing at all. I finally collapsed into a chair, thinking there was no way in hell I was getting to sleep that night. Too much adrenaline. Too many nasty dreams waiting for me behind my eyelids. I fell asleep. The room came back into focus. How much time had passed? I tried to move my arms, found that I could not. Somebody here. Footsteps behind me. Tried to move again, limbs not responding. I've had this dream before. Just got to... Oh, shit. A thin face appeared, leaning down in front of me, huge nose. My friend, Robert North, from my Bronco. He asked, "Can you hear me?" I couldn't answer. I was paralyzed, a brain inside a statue. "Blink your eyes, blink if you can hear me." I blinked, not to answer him, but to see if I could blink. I could. "Is there a way to kill a man using only your eyelids?" He said, "Good." He walked out of view, then came back and extended his palm to me. On his palm, something was moving. He held it up to my face. A spider. Huge. a body the size of a chicken egg, black legs with yellow stripes. It looked to have been bred for war. North offered it on the palm of his hand and said, "I want you to eat this." I was able to move my lips enough to say, "Fuck you." "I'm going to say some words. I need you to listen very carefully. Tractor. Moonlight. Violin. Clay. Thumbs." This went on for several minutes, North rattling off dozens of words, maybe over 100. He held the arachnid up, legs twitching. "Red. Sandstone. Trombone. Stain. Linger." And just like that, I was dying. I could feel a poison living in my body, shutting me down, rotting my guts, burning my veins. And there was only one cure, the thing in North's palm. Suddenly the spider was my salvation, the narrow, bright window out of this dark room. I gathered every ounce of strength and leaned forward with my head, my hands still numb and useless. And then I sucked the spider into my mouth with greedy lips. I chewed through the rigid, wiry legs and felt a hot, salty fluid burst into my mouth when I bit through the body. I quickly choked down the bitter bundle of legs and gristle and... I snapped awake and leapt out of my chair, alone. Still dark. The clock on the wall said 6:13 a.m. I ran a hand over my mouth, a lingering bitterness on my tongue. I whipped my head around, confirmed that I was alone. This was a dream, right? Eating a spider? What the hell did that symbolize? Look at the bright side. At least it's not a work day. My phone rang. I would like to pause for a moment to talk about my penis. My penis is like a toddler. A toddler, who is a perfectly normal size for his age, on a long road trip to what he thinks is Disney World. My penis is excited because he hasn't been to Disney World in a long, long time, but remembers a time when he used to go every day. So now the penis toddler is constantly fidgeting, whining, "Are we there yet? Are we there yet? How about now? Now? How about now?" And Disney World is nowhere in sight. Thus, one of the many awful things I can admit about myself is that the 2 years I spent with Jennifer live in my mind mostly as a series of frantic, breathy memories. Clawing hands, tugging off clothes, heartbeat thumping in my ears, fingernails digging down my back, salty tastes lingering in my mouth. It's biology. It's hormones. As time passes, I can recall fewer and fewer of our conversations, and I couldn't give you the details of our 5 most fun dates, though I have a fairly graphic vision of how each of them ended. If upon hearing this you pump your fist and wink knowingly, you can kiss my ass. She was a good friend to me. She put up with my bullshit, and at times not even I can put up with my bullshit. But all that is gone, and what is left is a big, black hole where the sex used to be. The thing with Jen ended with a pregnancy scare. She had seen my world and didn't want to bring a baby into it. This led to some violent arguments, during which I pointed out loudly and in sprays of spittle that if she got an abortion, the fucking unborn fucking fetus would likely fucking haunt us. I mean, literally haunt our home. Until the day we died and possibly beyond. It turned out that was the wrong thing to say. It also turned out the pregnancy was a false alarm, but I was spooked after that, found myself backing off more and more, making excuses because, gosh, I gotta get up real early in the morning and it's gonna be a busy day with inventory and all that, and I'm just not in the mood right now, Jen. We slowly went hands off after that. Jen thinking this had something to do with me not loving her anymore. Though the loving part of me and the penis part of me rarely speak to each other. She cried a lot. She slept a lot. We argued a lot. She left. So I had been off the sex wagon for 6 months as I stood there at the counter of Wally's Video, having dragged myself in for yet another unexpected shift on yet another frozen morning. It was going to be a bad day. The hormones come and go like the tide, and some days it's no big deal, and some days it's like being 15 again. The other night, a co-worker had insisted I take home a movie called Ghost World, which turned out not to be about ghosts at all, but was instead some kind of coming-of-age story about a girl who, I noticed, had a fabulous collection of very short dresses. All I remember from the plot is 2 hours of Thora Birch's bare thighs. But I digress. It had been my co-worker Tina on the phone this morning, asking if I could cover her morning because, gosh, even though the roads have been scraped clean, she hears there's supposed to be more snow today and she doesn't want to get trapped at work, and I'm just the nicest guy ever. She really, really owes me. Tina, by the way, is short and blonde and bouncy and full of cheerleader energy. So I got dressed and drove in, cruising on those few hours of fitful chair sleep. Tina is also engaged, by the way, with a kid. On days like this, Mr. Penis isn't big on logic. How about now? I folded up this morning's paper and dropped it in the trash can at my feet. I had scanned it for news of a missing person, a manhunt, anything of the sort. Nothing. The front page was a shot of kids playing in the snow. The person in my tool shed was apparently not noticed missing yet, or they were such a total asshole that the town had gotten together overnight and decided that it was better left unsolved. 3 hours passed without a single paying customer. I looked down at one point and noticed the newspaper had fallen onto the floor. The day before, we had put balloons up around the store for a promotion, and during cleanup, one of my co-workers had stuffed a balloon into the little trash can. Inflated. It literally filled the whole container, so that no more trash could be put in. This fascinated me for some reason. I heard the door open. Officer Drake sidled in the door the way cops do, still in uniform. He sidled all the way across the floor and de-sidled near the counter. I found my hands clenching a nearby DVD case. "Tell me, Mr. Wong, you wouldn't happen to know about a guy from across town who went missing last night? Your name was written on the wall in blood, and a pair of your gloves was left behind, and we have video of you killing him." Instead, he said, "That's downright beautiful, isn't it?" I had no clue what he was talking about. He turned and looked out the glass doors and nodded. Out there was the aftermath of the ice storm, a world coated in crystal. The little landscaping trees in the parking lot gleamed with branches of blown glass. It was still sort of dark when I came in and I hadn't noticed. "Uh-huh. What's up, Drake?"
"Haven't been sleeping," he said. "Neither of you, from the look of it."
"Yeah," he shrugged.
Probably just need a new mattress, right? Maybe one of those machines that makes soothing noises, like the sound of a waterfall or a jungle or something like that."
"Jungle sounds," I said, my face taking on great weight. "I don't think the jungle sounds would help me sleep. Reminds me a little too much of Vietnam." Drake didn't laugh.
"Me? It's my little girl that's keeping me up," he said. "She's 4. Wakes up every couple of hours crying about a doll. We come in and ask her about the doll and calm her down. So 2 nights ago, I'm walking past her room. She's not in there at the time, and I see this doll. I never saw it before. Big China doll-looking thing. The kind with glass eyes. Big puffy dress, you know. And it's sitting on the edge of the bed. I figure my wife bought it at a garage sale because I ain't seen it before then. Then I walk back by and look in there not 2 seconds later. And there ain't no doll there. Just an empty bed. I ask my wife about it, and she says she's never seen such a doll. Never."
"Yeah," I said, as if that shed some light on it. What did he want me to say?
"You figure out what that thing was, floating around in the Sullivan house?"
"I don't know any more than you, Drake. Just weird, that's all. This town, you know?"
"You know there was a cop? A detective that went missing a while back? Name was Appleton? Black guy? Started ranting about the end of the world, then vanished like a puff of smoke."
"I think I heard about that," Drake said.
"You know who was the very last person he interrogated before he went missing?"
"Me?"
"That's right. That's right. And they never found him."
"Being a cop in undisclosed is not a path to long-term mental or physical health, Drake. Check the suicide rate. And I'll tell you something else, too. The look I saw in the eyes of that guy before he went off the edge is the same look I see in yours now." Out loud, I said, "Why are you here, Drake?"
"I need a movie," he said brightly. "Gonna stay in tonight."
"Okay.
Why don't you recommend something for me? Something fun."
I reached over and plucked the first movie off a pile of returns to my left. Mulholland Drive, some David Lynch movie I had never heard of. There was no anti-theft tag on the case of this one. almost like we wanted it to get stolen. Here, I said, this is a good one.
It's something my kid will sit through?
Sure. I rang him up and he sidled from the counter. Drake put his hand on the door as I picked up another DVD and let out the breath I had been holding. Then, just as he was stepping out into the cold, I heard myself say, "There wasn't anybody else reported missing today, was there?" He stopped and turned. He let his gaze stay on me for a moment before saying,
"No. Why?"
"He's going to remember you asking when somebody does come up missing, you stupid fuck." "No reason," I said. I recovered with, "Whatever happened to Amy, I didn't want it to happen to anybody else."
"Yeah."
He waited for a moment like he had something else to say, but turned and walked out instead. My cell phone rang. Everybody had taken to downloading songs to replace the ringers on their cell phones, but me, I just set mine to ring again. One less thing to worry about. I pulled it from my pants pocket and saw John's name on the display. I answered, "Hello?"
"I told you to leave me the fuck alone, Vinny."
"You called me, John."
"That's right. Sorry. Have you seen the trees? Isn't it pretty?"
"That guy came back, John. The guy who showed up in my car last night. He came back and I thought it was a dream, but I'm starting to think it wasn't."
"Did you kill him?"
"No, John, and thank you for asking me that over a cell phone.
Speaking of which, did you find out about the you-know-what in your tool shed, as in a name?"
"No, the dead body in my you-know-what is still a mystery. I have to get back to work. What do you need?"
"You gotta leave the store."
"I can't. I'm the only one here."
"Close the store, then. Close the store and get out of there."
"What? Why?"
"You'll see. Meet me at the safe house. Noon. You're not gonna believe this shit."
The safe house was our code name for Denny's. I arrived and saw John at a far corner booth, a bundle of papers in his hand, a pair of boobs next to him attached to a girl. This wasn't Crystal, the tall girl with the electric blue eyes and short hair and the peasant skirts, nor was it Angie, the sexy librarian girl with the dark-rimmed glasses and ponytails and capri pants. It wasn't Nina, with the criminally short skirts and green streaks in her hair, or Nikki the bitch. This one was Marcy.
Oh, Marcy.
Contrary to the wisdom of the gay men who run the fashion industry, who coincidentally prefer their female models to look like thin males, the hottest girl I ever saw in real life weighed probably 150 pounds, and her name was Marcy Hansen. And she was John's girl. Rusty reddish-brown hair, about the same color as Molly's, wide cobalt-blue eyes that looked at you like you were the most important person in the world. I sat. We greeted each other. Out of the corner of my eye, off to the left of Marcy's boobs, John waved around the papers and said,
"You gotta read this."
At that moment I realized I was boob-staring, and I took the papers from John. Marcy wore tan cargo pants and a skin-tight t-shirt that said, "I swam the naked mile." Marcy was one of those girls who seemed to have an endless supply of stories that involved some kind of hilarious sexual misadventure and or accidental nudity. I took the papers from John's hand. I studied Marcy's boobs carefully. I caught myself again and held up the papers to obscure the supple swell of her bosoms. The papers were a printout, a log of the chat Amy was on the night she got abducted last time.
"I saw Amy this morning," John said. "I stopped by to, you know, make sure she was still there. She was pretty freaked out, reading that."
I read, but didn't understand until the last third or so, and at that point, everything changed. This, I thought, is the end. One way or another, this is gonna be the end. Chapter 13. The Chat Transcript. Johnny Five has logged out. Fairy Dust. Asshole. Mustache Girl. Still there, girl? Fairy Dust. He's banned. Evil Nymph. Dial-up sucks. Amy Sullivan. Still here. Evil Nymph. Anyone else lagging? Fairy Dust. This is the creepiest thing I've ever done. Mustache Girl. You should look out the window, see if there's lights. Evil Nymph. Stop with the UFO thing. Mustache Girl. Have you ever thought about getting hypnotized? They can recall memories of those nights? Amy Sullivan. No, Amy Sullivan. I don't even know where people go to have that done. Amy Sullivan. Sounds like a good way to get molested. Mustache Girl. Almost midnight. Evil nymph. I am so freaked out right now. I read a book about a Navy ship that disappeared. Evil nymph. They found it later, but the crew was all gone and some guys turned up hundreds of miles away with no memory. Evil nymph. They think it was some kind of time pocket or something. Fairy dust. Oh, shit. Amy Sullivan. That was a movie, The Philadelphia Experiment. Mustache girl. Yes. Fairy dust. It had Tom Hanks. The experiment gave him AIDS. Mustache girl. The movie was based on a true story, though. Amy Sullivan. Molly is staring. Amy Sullivan. She jumps up on my bed and stares at me till I take her out. Mustache girl. I assume the true story wasn't as interesting. Evil nymph. I'm putting on music. The quiet is freaking me out. Fairy dust. What if it's like a wormhole or something? Evil nymph. Bob Dylan. You gotta serve somebody. Evil nymph. Serve. Amy Sullivan. I'm taking Molly outside. BRB. Mustache girl. Amy, are you nuts? Amy Sullivan. BRB. Evil nymph. Serve. Fairy dust. Wormhole. I just got the weirdest picture in my head when I thought of that. Ugh. Worms. Mustache girl. Stupid dog. I'm literally on the edge of my seat and she walks away. This is hurting my butt. Mustache girl. Ew. The cat peed on my bed. Evil nymph. Serve. Mustache girl. She never does that. Fairy dust. My science teacher says if all the worms in the world came up to the surface, the world would be buried 20 feet deep in them. Fairy dust. He said there are 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, They would flow around the streets like a flood. Evil nymph. Serve. Fairy dust. They would flow around the streets like a flood. Evil nymph. Serve. Fairy dust. There is a world like that, I have seen it. Fairy dust. People die choking on them. Fairy dust. They are consumed from the inside out. Mustache girl. All of us find that exact same fate. Evil nymph. Serve. S. Gutenberg has logged in. S. Gutenberg. Hey, girls. I'm typing with my cock. Cyber? Mustache girl. Our race was created as food for worms that do not die. Our eyes are as sweet as candy to them. Fairy dust. I. Evil nymph. Serve. Fairy dust. I. Mustache girl. None find life outside of the throat. His jaws are like a lover's embrace. S. Gutenberg has logged out. Mustache girl. None. Fairy dust. I. Evil nymph. Serve. Mustache girl. None. Fairy dust. But. Evil nymph. K. Mustache girl. O. Fairy dust. R. Evil nymph. R. Mustache girl. O. Fairy dust. K. Mustache girl. It is done. Fairy dust. I just blanked out. What time is it? Korok, the slave master. Korok, the knowing. Korok, the wise. Korok, the living. Korok, the famished. Korok, the conqueror. Korok, the giver. Korok, the almighty. I serve none but Korok. Evil nymph. Fairy dust, are you o- Mustache girl. She's food. Mustache girl. Slash, 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 slash. Mustache girl. Slash, 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 slash. Mustache girl. Slash, 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 slash. Mustache girl. Slash, 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 slash. Mustache girl has logged out. I folded the pages and ran my hand over my mouth, unshaven jaw like sandpaper. Korok, the slave master. A blue eye in the darkness. Populations of worlds roil in his guts. As much as I hate being right, I hate it even more when John is right. Marcy said, "Isn't that just the weirdest?" I glanced at Marcy, then at John. Keep in mind, these two had been going out all of 10 days. John said, "Somebody's got to stay with Amy tonight." "Oh, and don't even get me started on her, John," I tossed the prince aside. "I mean, did you notice that she's not even retarded?" Silence from John's end, then, "Was she supposed to come back retarded?" "They had her at that school, Pineview. The alternative school where they put the retarded kids." "That would be the same facility where you went to school for a year?" "Yes, Pineview." A pause on his end, then, "Anyway, I was gonna stake out her place tonight." "Good plan. But Steve called and he needs me and the whole crew on a job site. A chunk of roof caved in from the ice, they say. John, you just made me close down Wally's, so... No, listen, guess where the job is? Your mom's ass? The drain router plant right next to Amy's house. We gotta be on the site at 5:30 in the morning. I don't get it. Neither do I. But they gave Steve all these requirements about who could go where and what part of the plant we should be in sounded weird, all of it. Plus, I really, really need the money. They're paying triple time. So can you stay with Amy tonight, see if anything horrifying happens? John, did you read the chat log? Do you remember that... A glance at Marcy. Thing in my tool shed? She's not safe with me, John. Marcy's eyes widened. You mean there's something in there other than the dead body? I closed my eyes and silently counted to 10. Dave, we've made it this far. What else are we going to do? Chain you up in your room? I got something else to show you. You see it, you're going to want in on this. You ready? John unfolded a white piece of paper with a color photo in the center, a printout from a color printer. Camera still from 2 days ago. A grainy shot of Amy's bedroom. Good light, early morning. Amy standing right there in the center, arms held up, bent at the elbows, 1 foot lifted off the floor, motion blur. I said, what is she doing? I think she's dancing, but that's not the weird part. I knew what the weird part was. There was a black shape behind her, standing there, in the form of a man, like a body painted in tar, head to toe. The now familiar image of a man who had been neatly cut from reality. I closed my eyes. Shit. I said to Marcy's boobs, what did Amy think? To her, John said, answering for them, it's just a picture of her in the empty room. How is that possible, John? It's ink on paper. Either it's there or it's not. Wouldn't you be surprised if somehow I knew the answer to that? Marcy doesn't see it either, just you and me. Anyway, I was thinking maybe you could put on a red wig and pajamas and pretend to be Amy, sleep in her bed, see if they'll abduct you instead. Will you stay with her? Notice the subtle transition from can you do it from a few seconds ago to will you do it? If I had jumped in and answered no to the first one, I'd have been saying, I can't, it's impossible. If I refuse now, though, it's saying I won't do it. I can, but I choose not to because I'm an apathetic asshole. Smooth. What would Marcy's boobs do in this situation? Fine. And watch out for Molly. See if she does anything unusual. There's something I don't trust about the way she exploded and then came back from the dead like that. I gotta get back to work. Good to see you, Marcy. I stood. She stood. She leaned forward and, to my utter shock, threw her arms around me and squeezed. She sat down and smiled and said, you look like you needed a hug. How about now? Thanks. I stood awkwardly for a moment, then walked away. From behind me, I heard her say to John, where was I? Oh, yeah. I ran outside, and just then I realized I wasn't wearing pants. I went back to the store and worked the rest of my shift because I'm a huge dork. Jeff came in at 6, took one look at the storm that was salting the air, and declared the shop closed for the day. I stopped by the house to change and saw I had a package in the mail, a thick brown envelope, from an address unknown to me. Handwritten, blocky letters. Little kid writing. I tore it open. I found a pair of cardboard glasses with plastic lenses, a Scooby-Doo logo on the earpiece, a prize from a Burger King kids' meal. It said Ghost Vision in spooky letters on the side. I put them on, saw a faded cartoon ghost smiling at me. There was a post-it note inside the envelope that said, help, I'm a ghost looker too, moo 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 fuck ass. Nice. I flung it in the passenger seat of the truck, then almost fell on the ice 4 times on my way to the front door. I knew I needed to shovel the walk before the mailman broke his neck. Sure, the shovel's right back there in the tool shed. About an hour later, I emerged from the hardware store with a brand new snow shovel. It was getting late, so I went straight to the Sullivan place. Amy opened the door with the too-happy-to-see-me look I associate with crazy people and dogs. She wore thin wireframe glasses. She didn't have them last night, but I guess she didn't wear them to bed. and seemed to have put a lot of work into her hair. Jeans and bare feet with tiny red toenails. It made me cold just looking at them. I observed that she still didn't have a left hand. "Hi," she sang. "Come in." Molly was standing in the entryway, looking at me with utter disinterest. Amy turned around and gestured to me, said, "Look, Molly, David's here. You remember David? The one who made you explode." The dog turned and walked away, making a sound that I swear was a snort of derision. Amy led me through the living room. The television was on, displaying nothing but the face of a white-haired old man staring quietly at the camera. PBS, probably. There was a picture on the wall, a black velvet Jesus painted in comic book tones. There was only a lone table lamp in the room, which left about half of the space in shadow. "Of all the creepy places to spend the night," she said, "you look tired. Your eyes are pink."
I haven't been sleeping. Got a headache.
Feels like elves tugging on fish hooks in my brain. Be right back. Amy vanished into the kitchen, almost bouncing. Vicodin. I sat on the couch and glanced at the TV again. Same old guy. Odd-shaped face. He leaned over, whispered to someone just out of the frame, then looked back toward the camera again. Weird, because he seemed to be looking at me. Amy bounced back in, a green Excedrin bottle in her hand and a red Mountain Dew bottle in the crook of her elbow. She nodded her head toward the TV and said, "Cable's out. I hope you brought something to read." I looked at the old guy looking right back at me. Oh, shit. The screen blinked, went to black, then came up on MTV, some reality show with teenage girls screeching at each other. Amy set the bottle in front of me and said, "Hey, it's back. I got that cherry Mountain Dew. John said you liked it, so blame him if it's not..." "It's not cherry, dear. It's red." "No, it's fine, thanks." I studied the television. Nobody home but the screeching girls. Amy says, "It comes and goes. John says that he saw a bunch of birds on the lines and they were flapping their wings, but couldn't take off because their feet had frozen there." Without breaking my gaze with the TV, I said, "To John, something being funny is more important than being true." I glanced at a grandfather clock that was ticking but was off by approximately 7 hours. The television blinked back off, switching to snow. Amy said, "See?" I said, "When the TV goes out, it's just snow?" "Sure." "Never anything else, like other programming?" "No. Why?" I shrugged. She couldn't see the old man. By responding to her attempts at small talk with nothing but ambiguous grunts, I was able to drive Amy back upstairs to her room. I glanced at the grandfather clock. 12:10 a.m. Realized again that it was utterly useless, then looked at my watch instead. 7:24 p.m. This was going to be a long, damn night. I thought absently that maybe if Amy got taken at midnight again, I'd be able to duck out of here and go sleep in my own bed. Nobody would notice. There was a coffee table in front of the sofa, and I noticed some magazines resting on a shelf on the end of it. I sifted through them. Cosmo. I picked up the top one and flipped through the pages. Topless woman. Another woman, naked, except for some whipped cream on her naughty bits. Two more pages. A naked man's ass. I had seen less nudity on Cinemax. I glanced up at the velvet painting and suddenly felt sacrilegious, ogling naked models. I stuffed the magazine back on the coffee table and nodded an apology to badly drawn Jesus. I looked at my watch again. 7:25 p.m. I leaned over on the couch and put my feet up, like lying on a pile of felt-covered bricks. I wondered if I could set all of the clocks ahead to midnight, maybe fool them into coming early. John and I had looked into the case of a Wisconsin guy who spontaneously combusted while driving his green Oldsmobile last year. We had one witness who claimed the flames formed a huge satanic hand at the moment of explosion. We went up there, talked to a few people, came up with nothing. Eventually, we get a call from a goth kid up there who was heavily into Satan worship. The kid said he had made a pact with Satan to kill both of his parents, then backed out of it when his mom unexpectedly bought him a video game console. The kid, as it turned out, also drove an olive green Oldsmobile. The avenging demon, or whatever it was, got the wrong car. Barbecued the wrong guy. So they can make mistakes. They can confuse identities. The kid felt terrible about it, from then on spent every night on his knees praying to God for another chance. For my own safety, I pray that Brad Pitt doesn't do anything to piss off the Dark Realms. Eyes getting heavy. A shadow moved on the far wall, probably from passing headlights in the street. My eyes closed. Open again, darker. Had time passed? Shadow on the wall again, elongated figure of a man. No, just the tree outside the window. Another shadow next to it. Another. A forest of shapes, moving, slowly. Was I dreaming this? Suddenly there was darkness right in front of me, pitch black. Two orbs of fire appeared right in the center of it, two burning coals floating right there, inches away. I flung myself upright, my muscles on fire with adrenaline. The room was normal again. There was still a lone shadow on the far wall, which was, in fact, just a tree, backlit from the front yard. I walked over to it, reached out, and touched it. The shadow didn't react. That was good. My watch. 11:43 p.m. I pounded up the stairs and burst into Amy's room, terrifying her. She was on the bed with a laptop, legs crossed under her, a handful of what looked like Cheetos frozen halfway to her mouth. I caught my breath and said, "How can you eat those and type on your computer? Don't you get orange shit everywhere?" Come downstairs. If this thing's gonna happen, it's gonna happen, but I want to be on the ground floor and near an exit. Why? In case we have to run screaming out of this place. And put some shoes on. Just in case. 11:52 p.m. The television was back to regularly scheduled programming, the basic cable package of somebody who doesn't watch a lot of TV. No movie channels. I turned it off and turned to Amy, who was sitting stiffly on the stiff sofa, biting a thumbnail. She said, "What are we waiting for?" "Anything. And I do mean anything." "Can I ask you something?" "Sure." I stalked around the walls of the room, stopping to peer out of the big bay window. Not snowing, at least. As long as you don't bring up your brother. "You said yesterday that, like, most of what people say about you guys is true. So, there are some things that I've read that, you know..."
"What do they say, Amy?"
"That you guys have, like, a cult or something? And that Jim died because of something you guys were into?"
If that were true, would I admit it?
I glanced at my watch, something that was becoming a compulsion with me. 11:55 p.m. "I don't know. You were there, though, right? In Las Vegas?"
"Yeah."
"And John says he didn't die in an accident, the way the paper said."
"What did John say?"
"He said a little monster that looked like a spider with a beak and a blonde wig ate him."
Awkward pause.
"You believed him?" "I thought I would ask you." "What are you willing to believe, Amy? Do you believe in ghosts and angels and demons and devils and gods, all that?"
"Sure."
"Okay. So if they exist, then to them, we'd be like bacteria or viruses, right? Like way lower on the ladder. Now, the trick is that a higher being can study and understand the things under it, but not vice versa. We put the virus under a microscope. A virus can't do the same to us. So if there are things that exist above us humans, being so radically different and big and complex that they can't fit inside your brain, we'd be no more equipped to see them than the germs are equipped to see us. Right?"
11:58 p.m.
"Okay. I mean, not without special tools."
"Okay.
John and I have those special tools. But just because we can see these things, these odd and weird and horrible things, it doesn't mean we can actually understand them or do anything about them."
"Okay.
Now let me ask you something. Big Jim, he was into some things. He had unusual hobbies. He built model monsters. But he knew some people too, didn't he? Weird people? You know who I'm talking about, right? The black guy with the Jamaican accent?" She said, "Yeah, I think we talked about that, didn't we? He was homeless. They found that guy, and I heard he, like, exploded. I always wondered about that. Do you think Jim was into something, too?"
There was no short answer to that, so I said nothing. Amy looked at the floor. 11:59 p.m.
Amy said, "So what are we expecting?"
"Anything. Beyond anything."
She looked very pale. She wrapped her arms tightly around herself, rocking slightly. "What time is it?"
"Almost time." I'm scared to death, David.
That's good, because there's lots to be afraid of.
I glanced at badly drawn Jesus, then pulled the gun from my pocket. On Judgment Day, I'd be able to proudly state that when I thought the hordes of hell were coming for a local girl, I stood ready to shoot at them with a small caliber pistol. I said, "Keep talking." Okay, let's see. Keep talking, talking, do-do-do-do-do-do. My name is Amy Sullivan, and I'm 21 years old, and, I'm really scared right now, and I feel like I'm going to pee my pants, and my back hurts, but I don't want to take a pill because I think I'll just throw it back up, and this couch is really uncomfortable, and I don't like ham, and this is hard. My mouth is going dry. What time is it now? I held my breath, my heart hammering. Anything. Ridiculous, the idea that anything can happen. Impossible. But we should have known from the start. The Big Bang. One moment there was nothing, and then bam, everything. What was impossible after that? 12:02 a.m. I glanced back at Amy, still there. Well, I said, they're late. Maybe they won't come with you here.
Maybe.
Or maybe their clock isn't the same as yours.
Another good point.
She asked, are you scared?
Pretty much all the time.
Yeah. Why? Because of what happened in Las Vegas?
Because I sort of looked into hell, but I still don't know if there's a heaven or not.
That stopped her. 12:04 a.m. She finally said, you saw it?
Sort of. I felt it. Heard it. I guess.
Screams. Bleeding over into my head. And I knew right then what it would be like. I took a breath and knew I was about to spill a giant load of stark, raving lunacy. It was just like the locker room, I said. That day at the high school. Not Pineview, where we went to school together, but before that, before they shipped me off there. Billy Hitchcock and four friends. Their hands on me like animal jaws, twisting me, pushing me to the ground. So easy, so fucking easy, the way they overpowered me. And that look of stupid joy on their faces because they knew they could do whatever they wanted and they knew that I knew. And that fear, that total hopelessness when I realized I wasn't going to kick my way out of it and the coach wasn't going to come in and break it up and nobody was going to come to my rescue. Whatever they wanted to do was going to happen and happen and happen until they got bored with it and they got so high off that power. I felt the Smith's plastic grip digging into my palm, knew I was involuntarily squeezing it. Before that, Billy's neighbor had this little yappy dog, expensive thing. One day the old lady comes home and finds the little yapping thing in her backyard, only it's not yapping, because Billy has taken a hot glue gun and glued its jaws shut. He decided to do the eyes, too, and look, the point is I think that people live on, forever, outside of time somehow. And I think people like Billy, they never change. And I think they all wind up in the same place, and you and I can wind up right among them, and they have forever, literally forever, to do what they want with us. In whatever way people live. Maybe you don't have a body they can cut or bruise or burn, but the worst pain isn't in the nerve endings, is it? Total fear and submission and torment and deprivation and hopelessness. That tidal wave of hopelessness. They never get tired. They never sleep, and you never, ever, ever die. They stay on top of you, and they hold you down and down and down forever. I let out a breath. 12:06 a.m. She said, Billy Hitchcock. He was the kid who died. Her words broke off, and she let out an enormous snore, like she'd suddenly fallen into a deep sleep in mid-sentence. I turned, and where Amy had been sitting, there was now a human-shaped thing with jointed arms and gray rags for clothes, legs sticking stiffly out in front, like a department store mannequin crafted by a blind man. The red hair looked to be made of copper wire. A hinged jaw clamped shut, and the snoring sound was clipped immediately. 2 seconds later, the jaw yawned wide open again, and the enormous snoring sound poured forth, a sound that was more mechanical than human. Artificial. I gotta hand it to them, I thought. I really wasn't expecting that. I heard a clump and realized the gun had fallen out of my limp hand. I also realized my jaw was hanging open. I tried to pull myself together, forced my legs to step forward. I reached out toward the thing. The gun was back in my hand. Amy was back on the couch, sitting bolt upright, looking blankly into space. I immediately looked at my watch. 3:20 a.m. Shit! Amy slowly turned her head, coming to. She saw me, saw the look on my face. Realization washed over her, and her hand flew to her mouth, her eyes suddenly wide. Did it happen? It happened, didn't it? I said, go upstairs and pack as much stuff as you can carry. We're getting out of here. She bounded down the stairs 7 minutes later, a satchel over her shoulder and the laptop under her arm. We found Molly in the kitchen, standing on a chair and eating from a box of cookies that had been left open on the table. After some coaxing and threats, we got her to follow us out to my truck. We loaded up, the engine growled to life. The windshield was a solid sheet of white. Amy found the cardboard ghost vision glasses on the dashboard and examined them with a quizzical look. I found my ice scraper from under my seat and jumped out to scrape the ice from the windows. Outside, I turned toward the house. I stopped in my tracks. I mumbled, oh, shit, shit, shit. There was a figure on the roof, silhouetted against the pearly moonlit clouds. Nothing but a silhouette, a walking shadow. Two tiny glowing eyes. What are you looking at? Amy trying to follow my gaze. You can't see it. She squinted. No. Get back in the truck. In a series of frantic bursts, I managed to scrape a look hole in the powdered sugar crust of ice on the windshield, then jogged around to the back to do the same. I heard Amy say, hey, what's he doing up there? I leaned around the truck and saw Amy was wearing the Scooby-Doo ghost glasses and was staring straight at the spot where Shadow Man was standing. She pulled off the glasses and looked at them in amazement, then looked through them again and said, what is that thing? Look! What is it? What? Are you using the damn Scooby glasses? I can see it. It's a black shape and... it's moving. Look! I did look, long enough to see the shape sprout giant black wings. That wasn't right. It became wings, two flapping wing shapes that didn't quite meet in the middle. It flitted into the sky, a black slip against the clouds, higher and higher until it vanished. I heard barking. Molly had gotten out of the truck, was at my knees. Amy kept staring up, her mouth hanging open, steam jumping out in little puffs. She said, David, what was it? How should I know? They're shadow people. They're walking death. They take you and you're gone and nobody knows you were ever there. You've seen them before? More and more. Let's go. Let's go. We climbed in, called to Molly. She didn't move, stood stiffly, trembling, growling at the sky. I called to her again, got out, picked her up, and threw her inside. I jumped in, floored it. We fired down the road, fishtailing on the glaze of skating rink-caliber black ice left over from the road graders. The house shrank in the rearview mirror. Beyond it, the low, flat drain router factory. Amy twisted in her seat and peered back through the rear window, then did the same with those stupid ghost glasses. Molly was up and dancing behind us, bouncing around, probably thinking she'd be safer out on foot. Amy squealed, look! Look! I gave it a glance in the mirror, saw headlights behind us, probably a router truck leaving with a load. I did something they don't teach you in driving class, which was to lean my head out into the blistering wind and look up, steering blind with one hand. Black shapes were swirling overhead, winged things and long, whipping forms like serpents, swirling, stopping, turning like bits of debris in a tornado. They were congregating around the factory. Most of them were. Some of them were breaking off and following us, dark shapes flitting across the sky and into the shadowy trees and houses around us, vanishing from view. I pulled in my head and focused on the road. Amy sat forward and strapped her seatbelt on, screamed, "What do we do?" We're doing it. Another glance into the mirror, headlights closer now. Trucker hauling ass, hauling drain cleaner. A shadow flicked across the hood. I stomped the brakes. The Bronco spun out, skidded, plowed ass first into a bumper-high snowdrift alongside the road. Silence for a second, then the apocalyptic sound of 18 wheels skidding on ice. The semi jackknifed, the front end stopping and the heavier rear still pushing forward. Toward us. A giant cartoon plumber, a red X through him, loomed in the windshield. The trailer skidded to a stop about 6 feet from the bumper, then rocked threateningly back and forth, deciding whether or not it wanted to tip, clumps of snow spilling off the roof with each sway. Silence, save for the tick of the engine and the rushing of the wind. Finally, Amy said, "Are you all right?"
Yeah.
I was scanning the sky for shadows. I glanced at the red cab of the semi, could see somebody moving inside. An elbow. A hand clamped on my arm. Amy whispered, "There. Over there." She was pointing, with her handless wrist, God bless her, at a black shape growing on the side of the semi. Several shapes, molding together, forming something like a spider. Sitting there on the white wall of the trailer like a piece of black spray-painted gang graffiti. The little hand clamped tighter on my forearm, hard, like a blood pressure cuff. A low growl from Molly, who had backed up all the way to the rear wall of the Bronco, pressed against the rear door like she was trying to escape by osmosis.
"David, go. Go."
Amy was whispering it hard. Harsh hisses of, "Go, go, 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 go." I slammed on the gas. The tires spun, spun, and spun, and spun. Four-wheel drive. Two wheels buried in packed snow, two wheels spinning on ice. The shadow spider moved, blurred, flicked across the length of the tractor trailer and appeared right next to the cab, just a few feet from the driver inside. I threw the Bronco into reverse, then forward, rocking out of the ruts dug by the spinning tires, praying for traction.
"David!"
I looked up. The spider shape was gone. I heard screams, curses, rage. The driver had stumbled out of the cab, a big guy, tall and fat, a goatee. The man was ranting, spit flying from his mouth, staring us down, fists clenched, face pink with the effort of it. He turned his eyes on us, a rabid dog.
"Cunt, blood, fucking cunt, motherfuckers."
Maybe he thinks we're plumbers. He stomped toward us and I could see them now, shapes moving around him, shadows wrapping around him like black ribbons twisting in the wind. And his eyes. His eyes were pure black now, the pupils and the whites gone in coal-black holes. A few feet away from us now, trudging toward us like a robot. I slammed on the gas again, spun again, felt the rear end shift and then settle in, the tires making a pathetic wet whine against the slush. A thin arm shot across my chest, and it was Amy, reaching over and slapping the lock shut on my door a millisecond before the truck driver started clawing at the handle. Crazed curses muffled by the door, his breath steaming up the glass, tires whirring against ice.
"Fuck you, motherfucking motherfuckers, eat your fucking—"
A meaty hand smacked the glass. The curses were replaced by a long, howling scream. The man stumbled back as if shot, a hand flying to his forehead. He stumbled, went to a knee, screeched like a saw blade on metal plate. He exploded. Limbs flew. Flecks of red splattered over the windshield. Amy screamed. A head tumbled through the air, landed on the road, and bounced out of sight. The tire sound stopped. I realized I had let off the gas, was gawking at the looping remains of the man's intestines, steaming in the frozen air. The shadows, restless again, crawling over the truck and the snowy ground around us, the things as stark as black felt in the snow-reflected moonlight. A tall one grew in front of us, almost the shape of a man, but without a visible head, and with too many arms. Molly went wild, barking and barking and barking, then melting into high, breathy whimpers. I stomped the gas pedal one more time, got the tires spinning, heard bits of ice and dirt smack the fenders. The shape moved toward us, melting into the hood, walking through the engine block, moving across the hood like wading into a pond. It reached up with an arm as long as a man, then plunged it into the hood. The engine died, instantly. The headlights went dark. Shadow everywhere now. Movement, hints of it through the moonlight. Amy breathing next to me, quick nervous gasps. For a long time, nothing happened. She mumbled something too low to hear. I glanced at her. She leaned in and said, "I don't think they can see us." I didn't get it at first, but it almost made sense. Whatever they were, they didn't have corneas and pupils and optic nerves. We couldn't see them normally. They were sensing us, feeling us out, searching, without seeing. I looked up, saw one shape flit away and disappear into the sky, another floating past the semi-trailer, crawling over the plumber logo, then dissolving into the darkness. I nodded slowly, whispered, "They don't belong here in this world. They're flying blind, with no eyes to—" A soft thump on the window. Amy screamed. Outside my window, inches from my face, was the severed head of the truck driver. A 6-inch hunk of spinal column dangled from his neck, hanging in midair. His eyes were wide open, no sign of lids, two orbs twitching this way and that, taking us in. Amy was still screaming. Some lungs, that girl. "Amy!" The head pressed up against the window, squishing its nose, cramming its eyeball against the glass to get a look in. Its mouth hung open, lips pressed against the glass, teeth scraping. "Amy, plug your ears." She looked at me, saw me pull out the gun, pressed her forearms over the side of her head. I started rolling down my window. I created a gap of about 6 inches when the head tried to ram into the opening, jaws working, teeth snapping. I jammed the gun in its mouth and squeezed the trigger. Thunder. The head disintegrated, became a red mist and a rain of bone chips. I glanced at the gun, impressed, wondered about the loads the stranger had sent me. I leaned to the window and screamed, "You should have quit while you were a—" "David!" I turned. Darkness was falling around us now, pooling, the clouds over us vanishing behind living shadow. Suddenly it was dark, cave dark, coffin dark. I opened my mouth to tell Amy to run and leave me behind because it was me they wanted and not her. But nothing came out. I twisted the key, the engine turned over, stalled. I tried again, it fired to life, I stomped the gas. I floored it and we went nowhere, 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 and then lurched forward across an unseen street, smacking into the drift on the other side of the road. I threw it in reverse, floored it again, spinning out, and then crawling forward. We were off. Out of the blackness and into the night, eating up the street, my hands strangling the wheel. The speedometer crept up, tires floating under us, driving like a hovercraft. I felt a hand on my arm again, Amy, breathing, whipping her head around, trying to see everything at once through the ridiculous cardboard glasses. The night outside got darker and darker, shapes swirling around, blackness closing in, swimming in it, like being downwind from a forest fire. And suddenly Amy was gone, an empty seat. And then I felt stupid. Of course the seat was empty. I came out here alone, and we had never found Amy. The house had been empty, and we all knew she was actually wrapped up in a tarp in my... The darkness swallowed me. The passing scenery outside was gone. No houses or grass or snowdrifts, like driving in deep space. Shadow poured into the Bronco like floodwater. A blade of ice pierced my chest, cold flowing in like poison. My heart stopped. It was like strong, cold fingers reaching behind my ribs and squeezing. And then I was gone, out of the truck, out of anywhere. A storm of images exploded in my head, crazed mental snapshots like fever dreams. Looking down, a black crayon in my hand, drawing pictures of three stick figures, one drawn with long hair, one shorter with a spray of red at the top. Under my car. My old car, my Hyundai. On my back, another guy next to me, long blonde hair. I'm holding up a muffler, and he's threading in bolts, and I tell Todd we're missing a bolt, that it rolled away. And he's saying that the jack is tilting, and get out, because the car is falling. Running, breathing hard, through a ballroom in a Las Vegas casino. Chaos. Then seeing Jim and knowing what I had to do. Raising and firing, and watching him go down, clutching his neck. Blue canvas. Knees in the snow. Rolling a body. Rolling it up because somebody could show up any second and it's so hard to move the dead weight. Back. In the truck again, fingers clamped on the wheel, plowing through deep snow, a mailbox flying toward me. David! I was driving in somebody's front yard. I cranked the wheel, ground through a drift, and landed in the street again. I saw Amy was back in the passenger seat, pale as china. I reached over and grabbed her by the arm, pulled her over, like I could somehow stop her from getting sucked out of reality again if I hung on really, really tight. She screamed, "The light! Go to the light!" No idea what she was going on about. Then I saw it, a pool of light in the pitch blackness just ahead. a flat of parking lot, a hint of an unlit red sign. It was getting darker, blackness eating up the landscape around me, a power outage during a lunar eclipse. I cranked toward the embankment and jumped the curb, climbed over a little hill, and then landed with a lurch. I slammed the brakes, spinning on a white plain as flat as a hockey rink. Thunk! We smacked a pole, light bathing the interior. I saw out of the rearview mirror the sign for a new donut shop. The place still under construction, but the parking lot lights on. And then I saw nothing at all because blackness settled over everything outside the little island of lit snow we had settled in. In a second, we were cut off from the universe, nothing in any direction, like we had submerged in a lake of oil 500 feet under the ocean floor, just black and black and black.